This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably. Like, and when you say fundamentally...
Should we just ask them to come to the interview?
Well, I just... You know? Why I wanted you on here is because you're like in the trenches. So yeah. I feel like a lot of listeners... So you're sure. In the middle of this.
In the middle.
And doing it yourself. So I'm hoping that a lot of listeners will be able to align with a lot of the struggles...
Absolutely.
...you're going through, but that maybe you've overcome as well.
Yep.
So that's why I'm getting into the Absolutely. Weeds on, like, the process of becoming a comedian, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very complicated answer.
Hot breath. What is up, Hot Breath of Verse? Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast. This is your host, comedian Joel Byers. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome aboard. This is the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. And you know what time it is. Hot Breath. I am so excited about our first official interview of 2020, Hot Brethren and Sistren. Last week, I posted a fun compilation where I highlighted the top boo stories of the show over the past 4 years. We had Cedric the Entertainer on there. We had Miss Pat on there, Andrew Schultz, Mark Norman, just so many amazing comics sharing their worst bombing stories. So that's a story we always like to ask on this show, and thought we'd start off 2020 with a bang because we are nowhere without our failures. Failure is the best teacher, so it's always encouraging to hear comedians at their level still reflecting and still knowing that no one is immune to the struggles on stage. We all go through it regardless of experience level, regardless of time in comedy. So that is why I posted that. It's very fun. And funny, but it's also inspirational and very informative. So if you haven't listened to that one, go ahead, check it out after this episode. Because the episode today, we've done almost 200 episodes. And I gotta say, I'm almost as excited about this one as any I've ever released. If not the most excited. Because the comedian we have on the show today is a comedian ingrained in the trenches. You know, this whole show, and really me personally in my career, is all about the independent hustle and really trying to pave a path for other comics to follow that. That's what I'm doing with my comedy special. I produced it myself. I'm releasing it myself, all independently, all with the mission to inspire other comics to bet on themselves and go all in. So if you haven't checked out that, it is linked in the show notes as well, or it's on my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. But my guest today shares that exact same sentiment, that exact same mindset. This guy, I met him at the finals of the World Series of Comedy in St. Louis, and seeing him on stage, I was like, wow, this guy has a special, unique point of view and a unique talent. And then we talked after the show. Turns out, he's ingrained in the St. Louis scene, so then we went around to different open mics around the city that night, and I saw the impact he had on the scene. Every show we went to, people came up, and we're like, oh my gosh, Andrew, what's up, dude? He introduced me. He was always so generous. We went to one open mic that had like 20 people on the list. He just walks up to the host, and he's like, hey, that guy, let him put him on whenever you can. And the host came up to me and he's like, when would you like to go on? And out of a list of 20 people, I got to go up like fifth. And then we got to hang out on the patio and just get to know each other more, Andrew and I and other local comics. So I wanted to have Andrew on the show because he shares the same mission that Hot Breath does and that you do if you're listening to this, or you're a fan of Andrew and you're going to learn a lot about him that you probably didn't know. But the big thing that inspired me about Andrew was just his independent hustle. This guy had started comedy at the age of 14 years old. And this is he's had his own specials released. This guy's performed in almost 300 cities, 11 countries around the world. And he's done it all himself. You know, it's really been just the bootstrap approach to comedy, which is what I'm all about. So I'm hoping this episode today, you're going to learn a lot about getting more personal on stage. You're going to learn a lot about just really doing comedy your own way and what is unique to you. And my big thing I like to do with my material is I like to create material and I put it through this filter of, okay, what can I say that no one else could say? Like, no one could steal this joke because they didn't have this experience or they don't have my perspective on it. You know, it's like we all draw from the same world, but how can you make it unique? I may have marriage jokes, but how can I make marriage jokes uniquely mine? So this gentleman has found his voice in comedy and such a unique and insightful perspective, and he has a message with his comedy, and you learn from it. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. Some people are just more silly in comedy, and they just like to make well-crafted, you know, silly jokes like a Mitch Hedberg. But you still learn something about Mitch Hedberg when you do listen to him. So that's what I always like to encourage comics is to, how can I create material that's uniquely mine? It's a process, but I think after this episode, you'll be further along in that process. So thank you all so much for all the support. If you do find this episode helpful, if you find it insightful, if you just find it entertaining, share it with other people. Word of mouth is our best marketing friend here in 2020 as we are kicking off strong here on the first episode. So if this is your first time or you've been listening a while and you're enjoying all this free content you're getting, maybe consider the Patreon. It's linked in the show notes. It's a very easy way for you to connect. You know, we just had Edward Rubin join the Patreon host level. He just joined. And we also had a fun and, if you will, very generous donation. If you go to the Hot Breath Pod website, if you go to hotbreathpodcast.com, there's a way for you to actually donate to the podcast. And Ruhal Dooley donated a very generous amount to the podcast and said, "My brother from another mother, Hot Breath." So all that support does not go unappreciated. It really does make a difference. Thank you all so much for this community we have been building here. And I am so excited to present to you, as there is only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath with Andrew.
Just be cool, bro. Be cool.
Frank.
This will work because I just did a 2-hour interview with Jerry, the joke Dr. Corley, in the same setting. But if we're holding the mics, it's now a different setting.
Yep.
Oh, hold on real quick. That is for you.
An official hot breath water bottle.
That's You're great. Official.
Yeah.
You now have your own hot breath water.
That's great.
It's Fontus water, the coolest water for the hottest podcast. Blue Ridge Mountain spring water from Georgia. Very nice.
So this is it? Like, it actually started?
This is the podcast?
No, but it started.
Yes.
Okay.
Hello. I'm about to do your intro.
Okay, great.
And then we're going to kick this off.
Cool.
Are you nervous?
No.
You excited?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just won a round of World Series of Comedy, so I feel like you're going to be in a good place.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood.
That's great. Yes. All right. Here we go. Hot Breathiverse. Welcome back to the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers. Did I just sit? Let me scoot around a little bit. I didn't like me sitting in front of the... I like the tree in the middle, between the palm tree. But then I just probably, for Jerry's interview, I was probably sitting lopsided. And guess how much it matters? Zero. No one's going to be like, "Oh, great interview, but the host was sitting right in front of that tree and it just ruined it for me." Or the host interrupted his intro to reframe the shot. So, this is the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. I am your host, comedian Joel Byers, and today's guest, hot brethren and sistren, this is a cat I met here in St. Louis at the World Series of Comedy. I don't always do this with the show where I meet someone and I'm like, "You got to do the show." But I saw him on stage, blown away by the material, but what blew me away even more was in looking into his origin story of starting comedy at 14, working at a local club here, the Funny Bone, and just studying comedy, a real student of the craft, and his DIY approach to comedy. He has toured around the world with his comedy. He's created his own tours beyond just like, oh, I have a booking agent or whatever. No, this guy has bootstrapped every opportunity he's gotten, all the way to most recently the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and several in Vancouver as well.
Vancouver Fringe, yes.
Yeah, the Vancouver Fringe. So this is a comedian who his work ethic you're going to learn a lot about and how you can create your own success. But also we went around the St. Louis scene here where he started and then he went to Chicago and now lives in Seattle. But in seeing how the community of St. Louis reacted in seeing him, even we went to an open mic and it was a full list. He didn't do a spot, but he vouched for me to get up and do a spot. That just shows in the comedy world the respect that this cat has in comedy. So there's a lot to learn from the craft side, but also in just how to be a comedian that people actually want to work with. So with all that being said, welcome to the Hot Breath of Verse. Andrew Frank, everyone.
Thank
Andrew
you, Joel.
Frank.
Thanks for, yeah, high five.
You made it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about this because in us hanging out randomly, we randomly did a show in Chicago a few years ago.
Yeah.
We randomly run into each other here and you're like, yo, we did a show at Hamburger Mary's. You know that, I think it's like a drag bar.
Yeah,
I think they do. Like, I don't know what the PC term is, but great, we have someone walk in to hear me say that. Triggered, sorry. But long story short, we do a random show together. Now we randomly run into each other. And getting to go around to the comedy scene and getting to hang out with you, I was just like, we got to get him on here. You seem to be very self-aware, and you seem to have a motivation behind your comedy that I think comedians can really learn from. Are you aware of this? Are you intentional about this?
Yeah, absolutely. But can you tell me what you think the motivation is, and then we'll see if it's accurate?
I was going to say pure, but that's a little vague. I think the motivation is that you want to create good, memorable comedy beyond just like a lot of people do comedy right now because it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But you actually want to have a message behind what you're doing.
Yeah, I guess there's a message in everything. But I definitely want to create the comedy that I want to see. Comedy really influenced the way I thought about the world as a young person. And I know what it feels like to be young and to be introduced to new ideas through art. And I want to be that for more people, you know, because comedy sort of serves as a very positive way to explore ideas that are contradictory to the ones that you hold. But you actually end up feeling good when you resolve those paradoxes, you know, because it's very frightening to if you're raised a certain way, if you're taught certain things, it can be frightening to go out and learn other things or try other experiences. And comedy happens to create dopamine and good stuff that helps you explore the things that you're afraid of.
That's what Jerry was saying in our interview we just did, was that
he talked about
laughter
dopamine.
Triggers the same like impact that like falling in love does. It affects your brain the same way. But you're thinking
love is scary too.
Love is scary, especially if you bomb at it.
Yeah.
What is let them know a little bit about your background
as
well, because that's an interesting context for your comedy.
Yeah, I started very young at 14. 14 was my first official stand-up set at my freshman year high school talent show at a fundamentalist Christian school. Did a 10-minute set for the talent show, and ever since then I fell in love with it and started going to this coffee house that was right by my house. The St. Charles Coffee House is no longer existing, but... a ton of high school kids went there. They were all poets and musicians. And there was one other comedian. And we would go there every Tuesday and Thursday and do, 10, 15-minute sets. And it was really cool to perform in front of our peers. Then I started going to the club. My dad is a pastor. Grew up in the church. And I got up on stage in the church quite a bit, especially at church camp.
Oh.
That was like pre-stand-up, like ages 11, 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
Every summer camp I would get in front of the whole congregation and do 5 minutes of stories and stuff. And then I was addicted to that, and I just that's why I wanted to go back to camp every year, is to do that.
Cool.
And then I basically was, this is there was a comedian, a Christian comedian, Tim Hawkins. He does like parody Christian songs. He's like a Christian Weird Al, essentially. He grew up with my basketball coaches, and so the fact that I knew a guy who had a job as a comedian, and he's very, very successful.
Very.
Do you know him? Do you know Tim Hawkins?
I'm familiar with him. Yeah.
The fact that I knew a guy that was doing this as a profession, that something clicked when I was young. That this is a way that you can be. This is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible. Yeah.
And what I mean, you grew up like strictly religious. I mean, there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about in your comedy, but what is the reaction to, I'm 14, I want to do stand-up now? Like, what is your parents' reaction?
I don't think they really understood what it meant. I don't know if they do now, to be honest. But, yeah.
You just don't think they knew? What was that decision? How did you decide, okay, I'm going to go do comedy at this talent show?
I don't know. I mean, it was a very small school, and I was lucky in the sense that
How small?
My graduating class was maybe 40.
Whoa, okay.
And we were the smallest class in the school, so I would say 400 kids total, 7th grade through 12th grade. And I went to school with these kids ever since 2nd grade. It was the same kids in the whole class for that whole time. And, so it was a very small school, so I was able to do everything. I was able to do sports and theater, and I don't know. The talent show was happening, and I really wanted to do it. So, and the year before, I had done an impression of our soccer coach, Hannibal Najjar. He was from Trinidad and Tobago. So I went up on stage and did a 10-minute routine of him in 8th grade. And then, I decided I would rather speak from my perspective than to do a character.
Do you remember like your first jokes?
Yeah.
Anything worth repeating here?
No.
Was it all religion-based because you're in the
school? There's a lot about the school. My mom was the guidance counselor at the school.
Oh, the plot thickens.
So, yeah, there's always been like a little bit of a rebellion against authority. But everyone like, yeah, I would make fun of the structure of the school, and everyone knew my mom, so I could make fun of my mom. And same with my dad at my church. Mm-hmm. I would get on stage and make jokes. So, yeah, it puts you in a unique position when your parents are authority figures for other kids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in middle school, my stepdad was the principal.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's the worst.
Yeah.
It's terrible. My wife's mom was the counselor of her high school as well. So I understand that dynamic and what it's like to be a teenager, but then your parent is like an authority figure around your friends.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah. So I think comedy has always been a way, all throughout history, to challenge authority, to challenge illegitimate authority. So the stuff that really works, it's like anarchy, right? If something is unnecessary and you point to it through a joke, the cracks become evident, right?
And then when did you start working at the Funny Bone?
I would say age 17, maybe.
17.
Yeah.
Okay. And your parents were just cool. Like, was there any resistance? Yeah. Because, and I'm reiterating this point because I feel like a lot of comedians are, it's like anarchy, and a lot of friends and family don't understand the path. Mm-hmm. And I feel very fortunate. My parents were never like, what do you mean you want to be a comedian? They were always like, oh yeah, we always knew you like you were on that path. It just took you realizing it. Mm-hmm. But like for you, was there any resistance you had to overcome in making this like your lifelong pursuit? With like parents questioning it or anything?
I think they question it, but they're very supportive in the sense that they basically told me and my sister that we could do, I don't know, we were both very ambitious kids. We both had dreams and we both went out and made them true. So they must have done something right. You know, they were supportive.
Okay, so no one was like, are you sure, or you should go to school, or...
Well, there's always been a little bit of that, but they just know my personality, so they know that it wouldn't work.
If they tried to tell you not to?
Yeah, I was gonna do it anyway, so we might as well just say it's okay.
You know? Contrarian, okay.
Yeah.
And now, how do they feel about your material? Because your material is... Like, and when you say fundamentally...
Should we just ask them to come do the interview?
Well, I just... You know? Why I wanted you on here is because you're like in the trenches. So yeah. I feel like a lot of listeners... So if I interview Jerry Corley, you know, he's been doing comedy 30 years. He's kind of on the other side of the trenches in a sense. You're in the middle of this.
In the middle.
And doing it yourself. So I'm hoping that a lot of listeners will be able to align with a lot of the struggles you're going through, but that maybe you've overcome as well.
Yep.
So that's why I'm getting into the weeds on like the process of becoming a comedian, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very complicated answer. In short, it would be that they definitely disagree with the material.
Okay.
The ideas contained in the material. I think they admire my approach to comedy, or at least the work ethic, or the fact that I take it so seriously and have put so much into it. So they admire that. So I'll say that, but, and then like career wise, what?
No, nothing.
career wise, I think it would just thinking, from their position, it would be very hard to be a parent and to have your child have a life path that is this ambiguous. So there's some objective, tangible things, about the progression of a comedy career, but it's not nearly as laid out as, a lot of other careers and a lot of other work. You know, there isn't like a surefire plan of steps that you can do to, and it's so open ended. That's what I love about art, is that it's like you can keep growing and keep your definition of success and all these things continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be hard for someone else to understand who's not in it. You know, and doesn't see the work on a daily basis. You know.
Yeah. So. Are you cool with your parents? It almost sounds like you're like, I'll say that and then move on. Like, are you guys on speaking terms?
Yeah, we speak. Yeah.
But there's
I'd like
to
speak better, but
there's kind of a rift right now because you're pursuing comedy.
I don't know. It could be a lot of things.
And you're not alone. And like, I'm not trying to make you corner you right now. I actually didn't. It's just an interesting path we're starting to lead down. I didn't intend to, but you're not alone in. If we're going to use comedy as the backdrop of like, this is what I love, this is what I was born to do. And like the people that I love and respect can't seem to like jive with this, if that makes sense. Yeah. So is that kind of where you are? You're 26, you said, right? Yep. So is that kind of the kind of crux you're in
now? It's a good summary. Yeah.
Okay.
But there's a lot of time and a lot of life to live. So I think, my parents and I will both learn how to more effectively communicate who we are and the way we see the world, you know? Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like, I'm not even doing this for a bit. I think, there's a big difference between the way my parents and I interpret art, where it's like, they have a literal interpretation of the Bible, right? Whereas I see the Bible as, the work of people over, you know, millennia, constructing myths collectively. And there's so much rich meaning and truth in them, just like any, artistic endeavor. So I view it artistically, but they view it literally. So yeah, I do think there's different, levels of interpretive skills, where they could see my act and not really know how to interpret it, you know, because, does that make sense, kind of?
So did they come to a show and then were like, oh, dear. They were like excited our son's pursuing comedy, and then because he's been doing it at camp and all this, and then they're like, oh, but he's talking about, very contrarian approaches to how you were raised, you know.
Yeah, they've come, but we've never had any in-depth discussions about the content of the the material.
It's almost just like a silent understanding.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's what I look for when I watch a comedian is like, how much am I learning about this comedian? Mm-hmm. Like, what are they doing material that no one else could do? And when I saw you do your set, I was like, wow, he only did 7 minutes and I learned so much, not only about where you come from, but your mindset, your philosophical approach to life. So how long have you been doing comedy? Like, you did it first time 14, but how long would you say you've actually been, like, grinding at it?
I mean, yeah, ever since that first one.
Since 14 you were on stage a lot?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I went to that coffee house and was doing, you know, two 15-minute sets a week from age 14 on, you know.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It definitely has increased over the years, but
it's only 12 years, really.
Yeah, 12 years.
Wow. Okay. So okay. Well, that makes a little more sense that you've been sharpening the sword to be able to say so much about yourself, your beliefs, and also your personal life in a 7-minute set. I was like, that's where at 9.5 years into comedy, I want to be doing more things like that.
Sure.
What was your process to getting that self-revealing on stage, if you will?
Well, I think I was always like that in person. I guess comedy was always the way I revealed things about myself to my friends and the people around me. It's just a good way to figure out I may have some subversive or contrarian thoughts to the community I was raised in. And so a joke is a good way to figure out, do the other people also think this, you know, and is it okay? And so, I got very good at that and very interested in that because comedy, reveals some things that we may not explicitly say aloud, you know?
Yeah. And are you cool with your sister? Is she cool? She's cool with comedy and all that?
Yeah.
And what does she do?
She's a teacher.
Teacher. Because you said you both found your passions and pursue it.
Yes.
So that's cool. And you're like a teacher on stage as well. But is that intentional? You being kind of like... You're saying funny things, but you're also like, I want them to leave with something.
Sure. Well, I think that's just a matter of sort of like intellectual responsibility, where if you're going to be on a stage, if you're going to be talking into a microphone in front of a bunch of people, you better have some like good things to say. Do you know what I mean? Like you're up there. So that's what I definitely desire when I go see things, when I go see a film, when I see a book, or when I see a book, when I look at a book. Yeah, I definitely I'm interested in the ideas. So, and stand-up's this really cool thing because it's, you're in charge of yourself. And, so you can layer the act as much as you possibly want with the ideas that you think are important and funny. So I try to put those all together, to see what they do to people's brains.
How do you put your jokes together? They're very complex. Where do they start and how do they evolve?
I guess it just starts with one observation and then you make connections between things. So you see one little thing that's funny and then it's sort of like thematically connected to things. Or one thing I love to do is juxtapose information that isn't traditionally related and then you find a way to put it together. So you sort of ram ideas together because, the imagination and all of life is connected, so that you can always find some way to connect something that's happening in the world or something that you're thinking. It's just a matter of recreating the steps to connect them, and that's often the brain delights in that when we put things together,
How do you find the connections? What's your process? Do you sit down and make lists or when you see two things, see that juxtaposition, now what next? What's the next step?
Then you bring it to the stage and you see what makes people laugh. And then I sort of it's kind of like the scientific method where you try to recreate results, right? So it's an experiment each time. And then you figure out which variables stay constant. And they're always going to fluctuate a little bit, but you find exactly where people connect the dots. You find out where you get responses and then you're able to build upon those responses. And you can reiterate what made them laugh the first time you say things in a different way, or once you find the entry point, then you can multiply the laughs based on, based on their responses, But I bring ideas to the stage and I look for the openings. I really listen to people when they're having the epiphany. And then you go, okay, now I know where it, erupts. Now I can recreate it better. And in a more complex way.
You do it more on stage than on page?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, so you don't even, you're not here's a juxtaposition, let me write some jokes.
I make
about
lists
each
of things, but
lists.
And sometimes I'll write long form, but because stand-up is a verbal art form, I try to have loose ideas that I bring to the stage, and then through repetition, then I can write them down. But it's very hard to write things that truly mimic human speech,
we write, it's almost like what we write sounds different than how we talk. I know Mark Normand said on here that
his writing process is for an hour every day, he just talks about topics, about jokes he's working on, but he'll just talk out loud like a madman for an hour. And that's how he writes, because it's like verbally writing.
Yeah.
You know, he just reps his jokes out loud, and that's how it comes off so natural and true to his voice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's very hard when you're sitting with a piece of paper, no matter how much you've been on stage, it's very hard to have that a truly accurate hypothetical crowd in your head. You know, really helps to have the social pressure of presenting these ideas in front of people. It kicks it into gear. You know, you got to figure out what you're trying to say, how to say it. Being observed is a huge part of creativity for me. You know,
being observed.
Being observed. Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
that you have all that there's all of this going on inside of you, and. Yeah, I guess it's just that attention sort of provokes what's inside of you, and you find a way to get it out to people, you know? Or it's like a desire to convey what's really in here, which you can't really do alone. You need to be seen. You need to be understood. I don't know.
You do. Yeah, yeah. You're doing great, man.
But that's it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So...
What? No, I like you're like driving home on a point, and then you're like, yeah, but I don't know.
That's how feel a lot about a lot of things, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Unless you're on stage, then you're like sure, because you're in complete control.
Yeah. Well, like if you get a laugh on something, you know, like, okay, well, that this thing has been confirmed or reaffirmed. Something you thought about reality, something you thought about yourself or whatever, is being confirmed, and that feels good. But when you're thinking about things, when you're talking about things with people, there's much more doubt for me. You know, it's a much more open-ended thing. Well, I really do say I don't know about a lot of things, because I'll put it out there and I'll go, yeah, but I don't know.
You'll say it with affirmation, but I don't really know.
Yeah,
I don't know. What is maybe your most epic bomb? Like, I can imagine. Your comedy is this very high concept. Yeah. And I would imagine starting here in St. Louis and then traveling around, there has to have been a show that probably a lot.
A lot. I could pick many.
Is there one?
Well, it's funny, like when I starting in Missouri, there's just driving around over all these years, like I can pass almost every exit on the highway and go like, oh, I had a bad show over there. All these towns, you know, that did their little one night of comedy, and I came in, and
great.
But I mean, I suppose the worst is probably this place called Sullivan, Missouri.
Okay.
It was Pirate's Place was the name of the venue. They were doing comedy for a little bit. I came in to feature, people were upset, but then the guy who was booking it didn't really understand how anything worked, and then he booked me to headline 2 months later. So then I come back and do twice as long, and then walked a lot of the crowd. But one woman in particular, she stood up and she said, "I rebuke you, Satan," to me. she rebuked me. So yeah.
How long into your set?
Yeah, maybe 20 minutes. Yeah.
Out of a headlining set?
Yeah.
So like you had to do 45, and
yeah. I did the 45.
Less than halfway through, a lady stands up and goes, "I rebuke you, Satan."
Satan, yeah.
Do you remember the joke that triggered it?
Yeah. Yeah.
People are coming in. Is that Satan coming in right now? So you finished the set, though,
I finished the set. Yeah, I always finish the set. Although, one set I wasn't able to finish. It was the day after Trump got elected. It was November 9th, 2016, Dodge City, Kansas. I got kicked off of a stage by a... the owner of the bar. I was doing a 30-minute set. He threw me off at like minute 28.
Oh, because you're making like Trump jokes?
No Trump jokes, no.
Just like, it's all like religion?
Yeah, it was science, people. Religion, philosophy, some stuff about the military-industrial complex.
When the lady says, "I rebuke you, Satan," what is your retort?
Well... I don't know. I mean, it really caught me off guard. I mean, I guess I just laughed at it. I continued. I understand her position. I really do. And then I, wrote a joke about it later, but not in the moment. No.
So people are walking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, less than 20 minutes in your set, people are getting up and walking out.
Yeah.
And then minute 20, she stands up, I rebuke you, Satan.
Yeah.
And then you just keep going? Do more people keep leaving? Does she leave?
Yeah, people are just up and around. But I'm doing my set, you know.
Oh, my gosh. How long into comedy was this?
It's maybe 2015. Okay. Yeah.
4 years ago.
Yeah.
I rebuke you, Satan.
Yeah.
That's a new heckle. I've never heard someone say they got heckled like that.
Yeah. Yeah, at my, it happens all the time. I did a JFL showcase audition in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And right in the middle of it, someone said, "You're going to hell." Stood up and said, "You're going to hell." She got kicked out.
In Seattle?
Yeah.
Whoa. But does part of that mean, does that part of it, when you get those kind of reactions, does it make you feel like, oh, well, this material is affecting people emotionally, so I'm on the right track?
It's not the intended effect, you know.
You want laughter, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. But it is funny. It's like, the intent is not to offend. But it's funny. You do the material so much, and, like, you do it so much, and then you forget, like, oh, this does... affect people. It's not entirely benign, mm-hmm. you know, like there is some power or some influence that you have with your act, you know?
But there's a bravery behind it. And I think that's why so many people care about you and are really, I mean, it really was like going around the St. Louis comedy scene. I mean, and I'm not trying to fluff your feathers, mm-hmm. but I mean, like comedians really, there was like a sincerity and like a major respect around you. And there was like a heartfelt connection. It seems
sure.
At least the comedians were having around you and the show. I mean, the show I saw you do, you killed as mm-hmm. well. So the material works, mm-hmm. but what do you attribute to the influence you're having just amongst comedians?
I just, I'm around a lot. So, mm-hmm. And people have seen the different sort of stages of my career and yeah, I really try to give people time and give them their dignity. Every comic at every level, you know. Yeah. I talk to a lot of new comics about comedy theory, and they just ask me a lot of questions about the art and about sort of going out on the road and how do you do this. And I give all the information I can, you know, because mm-hmm. I understand exactly what their position is, you know. And yeah, no one's teaching you how to do this. You got to go ask some questions. So I'm happy to answer anything that anyone asks, you know.
Well, I can guarantee people are going to be reaching out to you.
Oh, yeah,
this
that's
show.
Awesome.
Like the Hot Breath-iverse is strong. Mm-hmm. They reach out to guests and they get it done.
Yeah, cool.
So that's why I wanted you on here, because comedians, there was an orbit around you in a sense, mm-hmm. where comedians just, they wanted to be around you and they respect you. And you got me on this open mic that was already full of 30 comics, mm-hmm. and the guy was still like, yeah, we'll put them up and we'll put them up early so he mm-hmm. doesn't have to sit through this tragedy that is this show.
Yeah.
So there's just in me knowing and being in Atlanta, like, and seeing a comedy scene and it growing and different players within it, it's just cool to, you're an important piece of this comedy scene, and you attribute mm-hmm. that to just being nice and around, I guess.
And just caring a lot,
mostly,
you know, like
caring
about comedy and taking it seriously, you know. Mm-hmm. And really pushing myself and pushing other people. So I've challenged a lot of comedians to be better, you know. We should all be better.
We should. Yeah.
You know.
And it's cool you're challenging yourself. I mean, it's easy for a comic to get in the position you are here in St. Louis and just get comfortable and mm-hmm. just be like, "Oh, well, I have a tribe here in a sense." Mm-hmm. But you moved to Chicago, mm-hmm. and then you moved to Seattle.
I kind of moved to Chicago. I was like I was living in an Airbnb
for
probably 6 months. I was like, it was basically a hostel. I was like sleeping in bunk beds. I've slept in a lot of bunk beds. That's one of the keys to DIY comedy. You gotta go like really be comfortable with like sleeping either above or below a lot of people.
Oh yeah, that's what's funny. I love the DIY comedy. Yeah. I interviewed a comic here at the festival who lives in his van.
Sure.
And we did a tour of his van, and he's showing me, like, he unfolds his toilet, and he's like, "For emergencies, this is where I'll poop." And it's like, all of this, and he's like, "And here's my handheld heater for when it's freezing." Mm. And you're like, "Oh, that's cool, he lives in a van." And then you hear the reality, and it's like, you're like, "Oh, he's really doing it. And then you're like, he's sleeping in a hostel, like a shady situation. But tell us more about that DIY reality.
I mean, like, in terms of the standard of living, yeah, I think you really got to be okay with couches and floors, and you kind of have to get by on the generosity of other people. I've toured this country a lot, and people have let me stay with them, and they've fed me, and people have. It's amazing what people will do if they get to know you, and if they think you're funny, and people want to help you along. It's really cool. So that's one thing. When it comes to DIY comedy, it's you just always have to be looking for your own opportunities. You really have to sort of like be planning ahead, like where it's like you really have to go like, well, what would I like to do? And then you try to figure out the puzzle. You go, how can I make this happen? And not wait for anybody else to do it for me. You know, I know that's sort of vague, but like having certain festivals or certain destinations or certain venues, and you just got to, I don't know. It's sort of like this. I grew up playing like Zelda, right? Mm-hmm. On N64 Ocarina of Time. And I think that's a good model for like, it's a good simulation where you're like this little kid running around in this open world in this game, right? And you go to all these new lands, and you don't just go and fight people. You have to go up to the people in the town, and you press A, you ask them a question, and you learn things, and you piece that together, so you figure out how to get to the boss that you fight. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how life is. There's all these people. They all have information. They all have all this knowledge from experience. Go out and learn from them, and piece things together. You know, and figure out where to go.
Yeah.
So,
That's my journey with this podcast.
Absolutely.
Is sitting down with...
You're clicking A over and over and over again.
Every Monday, I'm clicking A.
Yeah.
And every Monday, listeners are clicking A, I would say. That's a great, very clear analogy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you have to go up and do that, you know?
You have to be
proactive. Or you're just running around, you know, throwing the rocks or, like, doing your sword at those chickens in the game.
Right.
Go up to the people that live in the town and ask them the questions, you know?
And... you'll know your questions when you know your destination.
Yeah.
Because I do think that's important. You're like, we need to know first what you want to do.
Yeah.
Where is the finish line? Mm-hmm. And then you can work backwards to build the
finish line is
to
death.
Get there.
And then there's a bunch of stuff before that.
Oh, do we die? What happens when we die?
Yeah.
Nothing? You think nothing happens when we die?
Well, something happens. you know? for sure. But... yeah, I think basically, like, your consciousness is no longer activated because it seems to be contained in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of life continues to go. So you're here, you're alive for a while, and then you die, and then the entire system of life continues to go, you know?
Without you.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to end this. No, we're not going to end it on that. No, let's circle back to a positive.
Yep.
The depressing reality.
I think that's positive.
that you die peacefully and happens?
No, that like there's no such thing as like ultimate death. It's just you. Like if you'd let go of the person, the individual ego, where it's life is not about you. Life is not, there's a whole system going.
Yeah.
And you're here to experience that, and then... it continues to go, and then you're no longer here. And that's so like every life just keeps flowing and flowing and flowing. And death seems to be quite part of that. Death seems to be the thing that like sort of propels life.
It's the balance. It's the yin to the yang. But a more positive death sounds like being in the clouds eating marshmallows with angels sounds more positive than, life goes on without you.
I disagree. Yeah.
You don't like marshmallows?
I think it's I don't think it's negative at all that that the universe continues to evolve and continues to make life
It inspires you to make the most of your opportunity as well though.
Yeah.
So if you're like, this is my shot, it's like, well, no one else is going to give me a shot. Let me create my own shot like you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that you said is asking questions. It is learning. So even making the decision, because I've had people reach out to me. I had a guy recently reach out to me from New Jersey who was like, I'm trying to decide if I want to move to New York or Atlanta to to pursue their comedy in a more serious like fashion. So you moving to Chicago, moving, like being a vagrant of some sort, I guess. What was that decision make? Like, why did you decide to do that?
Well, I just thought there were more opportunities there. There's
All for comedy.
All for comedy, yeah.
Okay.
Really, almost everything I've done in my life has been for comedy.
Yeah. Yep. That's the reality of comedy right there.
But it's because I love it. It's informed by love, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just comedy. It's sort of the experience of love. But I moved there for comedy. There's so much going on there. So many great comedians, and I learned a lot and got a lot better. And then decided to go to the Pacific Northwest because I really enjoyed it up there.
But we got to meet each other.
Yeah, we did meet each other.
If you didn't go to Chicago, we wouldn't be here right now.
Well, we would. Yeah. I guess
we wouldn't have met each other.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't have randomly seen each other here and been like, hey, Chicago.
Yeah.
And you want to go do this open mic? I was like, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So it would have never happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Maybe I like you more than you like me. Maybe
what
that's what's happening.
I like you.
Yeah. What? I don't know. I was like, it was cool. And you're like, yeah. But you got to do it, you know? We don't just let anyone on this show, Andrew.
I looked at the list today, and you got a good list.
And now you're on it.
Yeah.
So
I listened to Joe List's episode.
Yeah, you looked at the list and then picked Joe List.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good egg, as they say.
Yeah.
So you moved to Chicago, and then, like we said, Seattle. Why did you leave Chicago to Seattle? What was the plan behind that?
Well, I had been up there for the Seattle International Comedy Competition in 2017, and I just really enjoyed the scene there. I liked the nature. I really wanted to be in a city that stimulated me, the environment stimulated me. So being in a major metropolis is hard for my mental health. So being around a bunch of trees, being able to, I live in Green Lake in Seattle, so it's 0.2 miles to the club. So I walk to the club, and 0.2 miles from there is Ravenna Park, which is like, you can hike, and it's like this awesome valley, is huge, huge trees. And then there's a giant lake, right by my place. So yeah, to have both enough of a population to support the arts, and then to also have nature, to be surrounded by water, to be surrounded by trees, was very important to me. And to be close to Canada. I really enjoy performing in Canada.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Yeah.
It just seems like, as a comedian, it seems most comedians would be like, okay, I moved to this bigger city to get better. Now it's time for LA or New York. But you decided, no, I went to Seattle because I like the environment.
Sure. Well, I'm going to be traveling anywhere. Like, basically, the way I do things is I'll live somewhere for half the year and I travel the rest of the year. So I've been away from Seattle for the last 3 months. I went,
Where all did you go?
Well, I started in Seattle. I went to Fargo, went to Chicago, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., New York City, London, Edinburgh, Glasgow, and then St. Louis, Vancouver, Springfield. Now I'm back. And then one more week at Springfield, then I go back to Seattle.
And you booked all of this?
Mm-hmm.
How? Because I just booked my first tour here in October, and I'm going through the Southeast, and like every date is really thanks to a listener. Like every date I booked was people who are fans of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So how were you able to book such a long run of shows like that?
Two of the major stretches were fringe festivals. 25 shows in Edinburgh for the whole month of August. That was that fringe. And then Vancouver was 10 shows.
And you just you send a video to these festivals
you apply.
To apply? Uh-huh.
They offer you a venue and a time slot, and then you sort of sort it out from there. The other shows were just, I don't know, like everything sort of snowballs. If you really travel around enough, if you really do enough shows, if you're getting on stage all the time and you keep doing festivals and keep going to clubs, keep doing contests and stuff, you just end up meeting so many people in so many different places. And you can either reach out to them, or like I would say 70% of the time people reach out to me and say like, hey, when are you going to be around? And and then you just piece together the puzzle. You know, once you have a couple things on a calendar, then now you just look at a map and you figure it out from there, you know?
Yeah. And
that's what you probably did with your tour. You figured out a couple cities, and then you're like, okay, what's around here?
Exactly.
And yeah. That's the beauty of, we're in a real comedy boom right now. Every city, every town that has some people has a scene going on, has mm-hmm. regular shows. And yeah, if you're nice enough and if you have enough of a resume and you got a good video and people know who you are, then you can hop on shows, you know?
And just being a nice person.
Yeah.
Like you said, first off, just being generous, being caring, and being someone people want to work with.
Sure.
You know, offer you a show.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is just sort of like over the years, it's funny, people always ask me like, you know, how do you start working at clubs in other cities? And it's a long game, right? But mm-hmm. it really is the same way that you get in your local scene. It's just greater distances. You get in your car and you go to these places. You find the right times to go, and you keep returning to them year after year after year after year. And they see your growth, they see your improvement, and then you get some work. But it's the same thing with it. You just have to keep going. It's you don't just show up someplace once and then they give everything to you. You have to build a relationship with venues and bookers and your peers. Like this festival, right? There's 200 comics here, and all of these people have information or may book you on something. So it's good to make other comics laugh and to be doing comedy that has some integrity to it that mm-hmm. that other comics respect, you know, because then you get to be on their shows, you know.
And I think it's important for comics to really remember, as you said, keep going back to these cities, also keep progressing as well. So keep developing, keep getting stronger.
Sure.
Keep putting the work on stage as much as you are off stage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah. Because you grow so much in comedy, even just in a year, right? The difference you can, if you really put in the work, people are going to notice. They may not notice as much in your local scene because they see you all the time, right? But if you go back to a club and you haven't been there in a year and they see what you're doing now, it's very cool.
I was just recently in Chattanooga at the Comedy Catch for the second time, and someone saw me there the first time, and then I saw me there the second time, and they like sent me an email about how much I had like developed in just the 6 or 7 months since I was there last. Mm-hmm. And that was really, that was probably my first experience of like, oh, okay. Because I can get insulated in Atlanta, and I'm getting out more clearly with this tour, and I'm planning one in the Midwest now for next month. But it's like when you get out, I think leaving your scene is healthy, because then you do start to see your comedy in a different way.
And you start to see how other people are doing comedy, you know?
Right.
Because I know we get on stage independently, but your scene, you're all sort of like learning the language of comedy together, and you may be learning to speak the same way, to think the same way, and you got to get out there on your own and see what other people are doing. And I think just that, like, sort of the hero's journey of it all, like when you go to another place and you come back, like, and you spend real time alone. This is a major part of stand-up. You got to spend those hours alone, getting to and from places. You really sort of develop yourself and sort of like earlier you were saying like you said this style of comedy is like brave or something, but really it's just a matter of like it's not really worth it in the grand scheme of things. If you really are going to sacrifice all these things in your life to really pursue this comedy thing fully, you know, sleeping in the hostel and spending time away from people you love and make it matter, like create something that really means something to you. And don't pander and don't do it just for the crowd, because they don't get in the car with you and drive to the next place. They don't do you know what I mean? Like, you got to live with yourself and you got to do something that you're proud of. And the worst case scenario is and everyone learns this over the years, but like if you do what you think they want and you pander and it still doesn't work, then you've sold yourself for nothing. And now you got to drive 10 hours back to, you know, from Dodge City, Kansas. And you're like, why did I do that? You know?
Ooh.
So to create something that you're proud of, something that you want to present to people and that,
So where are you at now? So you're 12 years in, you've done all these tours. You just went to, I mean, Edinburgh? Mm. What is it?
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, yeah. Fringe Festival. Yeah.
It's the biggest arts festival in the world.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's like a, that's like a mecca. That's a destination.
Yes.
So
there's many levels to it. So I started at the bottom level of it, and you could, I could keep going back for a lifetime and continue to climb.
Yes. You know? But like we, like you said, in getting in with a scene, you just got to show up first. Yep. Maybe it's like a guest spot. And then the next time you may get like, you may be hosting or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in Edinburgh, you were doing an hour every night for 30 days, right? Yep.
25 days, yes.
For 25 days. What did you learn from that experience? And also, was the audience more receptive? Were they kind of more hip to your style?
They were very good crowds. I learned a lot. I think basically through that repetition, you just really start to understand the nuances of your material. Mm. And you really sort of develop that skill of... doing the same jokes every night and doing them in a way that feels alive, you know, like doing, really, it's hard to explain, but it's like, it's not, you're not just reciting material. You have to be very sensitive to, the way you're presenting it to people. And, so the material just got a lot more nuanced and conversational, and, the laughs definitely multiplied. You know, you find all these new spots that you get laughs in these ideas, and the ideas grow. And it's the being observed thing. If you really continue to be observed, and you're honest with yourself, and you really are aware, the stuff is going to continue to improve. You know,
you had referenced earlier knowing where you want to be and then kind of working backwards. Mm-hmm. So what are you working towards now? Where do you want to be?
I would like to continue to tour, like, really ideally, I would do an American tour, a Canadian tour, a UK-Europe tour, and an Australian tour every year. I would like to do that. I'm close to that. I did Europe, America, Canada this year. So, and the people that ran the venue in Edinburgh, which I knew this ahead of time, it's all part of a plan. They run things at the Adelaide Fringe Festival, the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and the Perth Festival. So I would like to spend 3 months in Australia next year, the year after that. Probably not next year, to be honest. I would like to write another act, to be honest. I would like to wait until I have another hour or something like that. But I would like to. That's one thing, and just continuing to up the quality of the venues and the opportunities. So JFL is something that I would like soon. There's many steps to that too. So I got the first audition for that in January when I moved up to Seattle. And then I think you just got to keep like, so they have, now they have an impression of me. You keep doing it year after year and hopefully show them your growth, you know? So that's one thing. Yeah. But really I just want the material to get better. I want to be a better comedian and perform in new and better places and see where that takes me.
Are these fringe festivals more like kind of one man showy as opposed to like a stand up? Like is the hour you're building, like you said, you want a new hour before you go to Australia. Yeah. Like is the hour almost like it has like a story arc more than just like, here's a set.
What I would do in a club. It's exactly my act.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And it's jokes the whole time for an hour. But thematically, it is, it fits in with the festival vibe.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
But it's straight stand-up, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Stand-up can do a lot of things. Like, you really can say things that are emotional. You can say things that are intellectual. All that stuff can be contained in comedy, you know.
I think it's important for comics to look at their stand-up as, like, a show, like you're saying. Because when I taped my special, and that was my first time ever putting myself on the fire like that of like, okay, you have a date and you have to nail this, is like, I had a lot of material, but as I started to mold it together, I was like, oh, but that joke actually ties to this joke. And it became just organically through the trial and error. It actually became like a story. Mm-hmm. And the biggest compliment was, oh, it had like an arc to it.
Sure.
And before I put that pressure on myself to create a show, I was more like, oh, I just have all this material about my life. But as it started to mold together, it was like, oh, there's a story, and I can take them down here. Because I cried at my wedding.
Yeah.
And a big part of me talking about it, I wanted to actually cry when I talked about it. I wanted to go to that moment and actually cry and then flip it, the punchline, like misdirecting that I wasn't crying. I was crying that the wedding planning was over, but I build up to that moment. So part of documenting the special, we show the evolution of that joke from me in an open mic to where I'm like trying to fake cry all the way to the progression of it at the special where I do hit that note and it gets an applause break. That's the first time. I think it's important for comics to challenge themselves in that way too, of like, how far can I push the performance aspect of my show?
Absolutely.
Because that was in 9.5 years, that was my first time like, oh, I want to take them down for a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, but this is going to, I need to work at that moment. And when I nailed it and it got an applause break, I was just like, oh, there, like you said, stand-up can do so many things. That's that resonated with me and inspired that story because that was my first moment on stage where I was like, oh, there's more to this than just like, rah, rah.
You
can take them down and around and really affect them.
Sure. Yeah, so like emotions and vulnerability and honesty, these things are so important for comedy. Like, yeah, I see a lot of comics who like are like irony is their main sort of mode of expression. And I, and as cool as that is, and it's like there's great jokes that can be told, I do think you hit a wall. I think it's a defense mechanism. And it's sort of like you put up a wall between, you don't want the crowd to see your real self, what you really feel, and what you really think. And so we create a character for the stage as opposed to, so. So anyway, so you having those emotions and you really talking about it and making a joke of it, but yeah, like, I don't know. A lot of comedy can be very detached. And I think it's important to really show who you are up there.
Agreed. And I always try to put my material through the filter of, could someone else say this and it be just as funny? You know, like, how can I make this material uniquely mine? And that takes time. You know, I'm 9.5 years in, you're 12 years. So this all takes time and people, listeners need to understand that. But I think the sooner you can make that your intent with your comedy, the sooner you're going to start to see that progress and start making that connection with an audience to where it is, I rebuke you, Satan, or they're coming up after, like telling you, not just saying you were funny, but like telling you what was funny and why and how it affected them. That's changed my whole approach to comedy.
Absolutely.
When people start coming up after and really like explaining how they were affected as opposed to, you were funny. I don't remember anything you said, but you were funny.
Yeah, I'm like I do think, in stand up, like if you tour enough, you're in a lot of new places, and you don't really stay for very long. So, and you want deep human connection, right? So, there is something. It's very intentional. The act that I present, it's an hour. Like Edinburgh was so nice because all these people sort of came up and were already like an hour into a conversation, and they know who I am and what I think about the world, and then they tell me their ideas and they tell me their experiences with these things. And it sort of encourages this type of conversation and this type of connection that is very hard to create. Yeah, I think like that's been a very life sustaining thing is like you go on stage and you connect with people in a certain way and then like the quality of the conversation and what people are willing to tell you about themselves afterwards is much higher after you've shared about yourself, you know? Because everyone sort of hides a bunch of stuff, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the fact that someone would know that they're safe and that they won't be judged and that they can talk to another person about things that they've thought about or experienced, it's very cool, you know?
Yeah.
So you end up making some really, really close friends and have all these awesome relationships in a very short amount of time when you're on the road, you know, and then you go back and you continue to see those people.
So do you collect these people's emails or do you do anything to stay in touch with them even when you're not there? Like what's the kind of the business behind the tour in a sense? You know what I mean? Like it's cool to go on tour, but like, how do you live? Cause like, I mean, for instance, you know, I mean, a recent experience I was in, like when I travel, I mean, even here, you know, I just baked a bunch of sweet potatoes and boiled eggs. I was in Birmingham recently. The fridge was too cold. The eggs were frozen. I'm sitting here eating crunchy eggs in a hotel alone. So like, what is your experience with the reality of that DIY approach? You're like, yeah, I'm doing it. And then sometimes you're like, oh, I'm doing it.
Have you eaten anything weird? Or?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I ate haggis in Edinburgh. Do you know what haggis is?
I've heard the word.
It's like sheep intestines.
Oh, okay. But that's like a delicacy there.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like Vienna sausages.
Yeah.
it's not that depressing, yeah. I guess.
But I don't know. Like, yeah, I eat a lot of weird things.
Just on the road, though. You know what I mean? Like, just to get by and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all like a game, you know? It's mm-hmm. all a game. Keep yourself alive and keep telling jokes.
It's all a game. Know?
Yeah. It's a fun game, though.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, when you really have something that you love and really something that's motivating you, it makes everything a lot easier, you know? Any sort of thing that you, like, any obstacle or any sort of, I don't know, your car breaks down or, like, you know, you don't have a place to stay or all these things, like... It's all like, these are just sort of like obstacles that are, I don't know, you just figure it out. Like, I sort of like the challenge of it all. I like, I like, the survival aspect of it, you know?
Yeah. Life finds a way.
Yeah.
As Jeff Goldblum said
sure.
in Jurassic Park.
And I get like, it makes it a lot easier if you love people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
'Cause then they'll, you know, it'll all be all right.
It makes, maybe. when you're doing what you love, it makes all the work worth it too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you are having to sleep in your car because you couldn't find a place, it is like, I would rather be doing this than waking up to go to a cubicle tomorrow.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I think sort of owning your own like labor is, it's something I really think is important, and not everybody can do it. And it does take a long time to get to that point, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, to have a skill that belongs to you and that you can, it contributes value to other people, and you can, to own your own labor is very important to me.
Whew. Dude, this has been maybe the fastest interview's gone. We're at an hour.
Okay.
This has probably been the fastest episode has flown by because, like, I have like a whole list.
Sure.
I mean, I have this whole page of research and like I like private investigate my guests almost to the point of like, I know like what hospital they were born in, but like I met you like yesterday and we're chilling at this open mic afterwards. Mm. And I was just like talking to you for all these hours. I was like, dude, you should do the podcast. We should have been doing it this whole time. Like there's something about you.
Mm.
So it compelled me to do this, and I think I learned a lot from this experience, and just I didn't have all these talking points, so it challenged me to listen more intently, so it allowed me to be more in the moment and just react more, and I feel like I'm going to carry that forward. And I don't know why I felt compelled to tell you that right now, as if you've changed me.
Well, I'm glad you
me.
Feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We should all be getting the best out of each other.
That's a good point. And when you're finding the best in yourself, there must be some sort of unseen connection that inspires you to do the same. Because I don't know what just ran into you, and then we go to these open mics, and I'm like, this guy's amazing. He needs to be on here.
Yeah.
How? What is the sauce? You know. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been very fun.
This is one of those moments in comedy that like. I think is like it's one of those tipping points of like, okay, time, there's like a new chapter to start writing.
What's the new chapter?
The self-made approach, I think. And like you said, creating that connection and owning your labor. Like up till now, really, it's been more of just like, I just want to get good at stand-up and then just be on stage and just be cool or what. To a degree, you know, but actually thinking of the further impact you can have with your comedy and just what you can do on your own. And on your own, I mean putting in the work and labor, but you can't create a tour alone, you know, being loving people.
Yeah, you always need other people.
Yes.
Have you ever seen Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brother movie?
Yes.
It's one of my favorite movies, and one of the main sort of lessons that, like, Llewyn is, you know, this traveling, like, or he's a folk musician in Greenwich Village in the 60s, and he's in this sort of like creative purgatory where he's incredibly talented, but he's like sort of an asshole, and he like doesn't really treat people well, and he's just is stuck in this cycle, right? And he can't ever get more success, and no one ever notices him, and he sort of fails to appreciate all the people that are taking care of him, and that he's you can't be narcissistic in this. You can't think that this is all about you. There's all these people that are involved in your life and that are part of your journey, and even if you're up there with your guitar alone, even if you're telling jokes, individually, you're connected to all the other people and every crowd, every person you stay with, every person that you talk to, like, and these ideas aren't coming from you alone. Like, you went to a school and you had a family and like you have all these friends and all these people. So yeah, we should all try to be as like sort of original and creative as we can be, but let's be honest here. All like we're all influencing each other and all sharing knowledge and experience with each other. So, yeah, to really appreciate that and to be grateful for the other people in your life, you know, and to know that they've created you just as much as you've created yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
Especially your parents that do create you.
Yeah.
See, we came full circle there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've been so generous with information and insight. Before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know, or you want comedians' advice, or is there anything else you want to leave us with?
I don't know. No.
No? Great.
I guess not.
Okay. You've said a lot.
Yeah.
I always just...
Are you pleased with it?
Oh, I love this.
Okay.
Oh, this has been one of my favorite episodes, for sure. Done almost 200 interviews. Yeah. This is one of my favorites. So I learned a lot from you, and I know the listeners did, but I always close the interviews by asking the guest, is there anything else they want the world to know? And some people just say no, and some people then add another 20-minute diatribe, sure. You know. So.
Well, I'm sort of under the I'm sort of in the camp where it's like whoever wants to know stuff, they're going to go – like curiosity is the thing that should inform it. So we can tell each other things, but – ultimately the sort of the question and the search has to come from you. Do you know what I mean? So does that make sense? Like, so yeah, you can't really like tell people things. They sort of have to want to know.
Boom.
Right.
Mic drop.
So whatever you want to know, go figure it out. Go. And don't think you just get to figure it out like instantaneously. It's a long thing.
It's a process.
Yeah.
And it's work, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
So please let the Hot Breathverse know where they can connect with you,
sure,
and support you. And like you said, you like answering questions.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Where, how can they connect with you?
You could email me directly, andrewfrankcomedy@gmail.com. I have a personal Facebook page.
Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah, you're good.
We want to reset that.
Okay, that's fine.
No, I mean, we're going to leave it in, but I want to make sure they hear how they can connect with you.
Yeah. AndrewFrankComedy@gmail.com is my email. I answer all my emails. I have a personal Facebook page, Andrew Frank. I have a fan page, but I don't really do anything on it. So I just sort of speak to people more directly. So people can add me there. And my website is AndrewFrankComedy.com. I have a bunch of stuff on YouTube as well. I have an hour that I filmed here in St. Louis in 2016. It's just on YouTube. It's called Andrew Frank Macrocosm.
Great name.
Yeah. I filmed that when I was 23. It's good. The stuff is better now. It's up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch of showcase videos and stuff. You can find me there, and you could look at my schedule and just see me live somewhere, and we'll talk, you know.
Yes. Awesome. Hey, Andrew Frank, thanks for being on Hot Breath, my man.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah.
Did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun, yeah.
Would you mind looking at the camera and tell people why they should listen to Hot Breath?
Why they should?
Yeah, let them know who you are and why they should listen to Hot Breath.
Hi, I'm Andrew Frank, and if you're a comedian or anybody interested in comedy, this is a thing to listen to that is lovely and informative, and Joel's awesome, and I think you can get a lot out of it, and it will make your day better. It will get you to where you're going. If you're listening to this in the car or you're walking, hopefully you're walking somewhere for the sake of the planet. it'll get you to your destination. It'll get you somewhere in your mind that is a good place to go. So check it out. Check out all the episodes.
Hot breath. You nailed it. Thanks. All right. Andrew Frank, that is all. We'll see you next Monday, Hot Breathiverse.
Bye, everybody.
Peace.
Well, all right, Hot Breathiverse. Hang out with me in this outro real quick. I have some very exciting news for you. But the big takeaway, my favorite part, is just Andrew encouraging us to all learn from each other and grow from each other and help each other. So that is what this show is all about. I enjoy helping you however I can. Other listeners love connecting with other listeners. That's why we started the private Facebook group. If you go on Facebook, search Hot Breath Comedy Network, request to join, let me know how you found the show, and then you'll be connected with listeners from around the world. Literally, this show has listeners on every single continent except Antarctica. But we're getting on Antarctica. So I appreciate all that you do in sharing this show. That is really how we've been able to grow across the entire world, is word of mouth. A lot of people reach out saying they heard about the show just because they were at a show and a comic told them about this. They're on an open mic and they're like, hey, have you heard Hot Breath? No, well, you got to check out this episode with Andrew Frank. Or you got to check out this episode he did with Rich Voss, or, you know, Roy Wood Jr., Dulce Sloan. I mean, there's almost 200 episodes for you to go check out. So if you did enjoy this, let me know. Connect with me directly on social media at Joel Byers Comedy, at Hot Breath Pod. If you do appreciate this show coming into the new year, as we are growing this show, it's a one-man band right now, okay? And if you want to maybe support in general, you could pick up the comedy special. Go to joelbyerscomedy.com or go to the link in the show notes. Even just watch the trailer. If you find it funny, share it. Let other people know. There's a hilarious comedy special, and it's unique. There's some behind the scenes going on during the special, and you get to see my dog and my wife and my mom, and just 10 years in the making, I decided to release a comedy special all by myself. And a listener and fan, Isaac Stackhouse, had a production company, Blind Lincoln Productions. I did his podcast. He mentioned about being able to shoot my special. Boom. Now we have a special. So, and actually, while at the World Series of Comedy, I did a podcasting seminar and got heckled by someone in the audience. I got a little tense, so I actually threw that up on the Patreon for all the Patreon members. Definitely go over there, check that out. You're going to love it. I'm getting long-winded today. I guess I'm just super excited about this episode, and I hope you are too. But we'll get out of here. I won't hold you up anymore. I know you're very busy, and you got to get to getting. So I appreciate all your support. It really does make a difference, and I'm excited to connect with you and hear how you enjoyed this episode. So, all that being said, until next Monday, well, you know, at the end of all these episodes, I thank my wife. So, thank you to my wife, Erin Byers. She made the theme song for this show. She also made the theme song for the Trophy Husband comedy special. Go check out that trailer. Hear it for yourself. And, of course, until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.